Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avlon, a longtime journalist and author, currently running for Congress in New York's 1st Congressional District. But this podcast, which we'll bring to you weekly, is all about how to solve the common problems we face. It's the result of a longstanding frustration I've had as both a journalist and a candidate, because we seem to fixate on our problems exclusively, to fetishize them, but we don't talk enough about what we can do to fix our problems, to solve our problems. And that's where the real civic excitement should be, because a democracy depends on an empowered citizenry. It depends on citizens debating constructively how we can solve the common problems we face, using common facts and building on common ground. It's not going to happen from either of the extremes. It's going to happen from a strong and vital center. And that's what these conversations will be about, to focus on how to solve the problems we face, to leave you not just smarter, but to advance an argument about how we can come together as a country and a community again. Welcome to How to Fix It. The United States of America is in the midst of the worst drug epidemic we have ever faced. And yet, it has not been a top-line topic of conversation in our political debates. I'm talking, of course, about the fentanyl crisis. Imagine if an airliner crashed every single day in America and nobody was focusing urgently on the need for stricter aviation regulations. That's analogous to the situation we're facing in our country, where nearly 80,000 Americans die every year in this pandemic. This is personal. And joining us today is Kamal Berwani, who found himself fighting on the front lines to raise awareness and find solutions for how to fight the fentanyl epidemic being imported to our shores. Kamal, thank you for joining us.
Oh, I appreciate you having me on.
Kamal, tell us about how you came to be aware of this national crisis and how it hit home for you.
I became aware through my own personal tragedy when my son, Ethan Berwani, went to the Mohegan Sun, the casino in Connecticut, with a few of his friends to celebrate his graduation from college. And that was in May of 2021. And I thought, you know, he asked me if it's okay for him to go. And I said, it's your call. And I didn't stop him. In retrospect, I should have, because I thought, what could be safer than a casino with 24-hour cameras and security, as well as 24/7 EMTs? But it was there that, by chance, he met a stranger who gave him something that was laced with fentanyl. He gave him cocaine laced with fentanyl. Ethan had never tried fentanyl in his life. He was opioid naive. And within 15 minutes, he collapsed and shortly thereafter was carried out on a stretcher. And then days later, was declared brain dead in Hartford Hospital. So it was through that tragedy that I understood the gravity of the situation, how big this epidemic is, of fentanyl poisonings and overdoses across the country.
Kamal, there are 200 Ethans in our country every day, 200 deaths a day from fentanyl. And to your point, these are not just overdoses, they are poisonings. This is a lethal, cheap drug that is flooding our country, brought in overwhelmingly from overseas, and it's killing a generation. I want to focus on the solutions, because that's the point of this podcast. The statistics are horrific, but there are actions we can take to make it just a little bit better. And you and I have talked about and written an op-ed about the need for combating the supply, improving prevention, and then harm reduction. So let's talk about the problem of the supply of fentanyl, how it's getting into our country, and what more we can do to stop that.
Sure. And I've done a lot of work over the last 3.5 years to understand the issues across all the four vectors you mentioned. And supply is the beginning of the problem. It's clear that fentanyl started being mass produced in China, and now the precursors of fentanyl, the chemicals that make up fentanyl, 97% of those precursors come from China. And then they're moved to Mexico, where they're mixed in and fentanyl's created through those precursors. Now, those precursors really have no other use than to create fentanyl. And if you distribute those precursors within China, you get the death penalty. That's what you get if you were to move them within the country. If you export them, according to a congressional report, there's a tax incentive that's being given to those exporters. So the cartels in Mexico mix them in, and they come in through this country through multiple ways. One of the ways they come in is through the 4 million packages of uninspected mail that come into the country every day, because they fall below certain guidelines for inspection. Another way they come in is through land borders, through cars and people walking across a border between the U.S. and Mexico. And some of it actually is produced in the U.S., but that's the minority as far as we know. So a lot of fentanyl flows in the country, and it takes, you know, very small amounts of fentanyl to cause a death, 2 milligrams worth, which is, you know, a few grains of salt. And it's easy to make, right? There's an unlimited supply because it's a synthetic opioid. There is no growing plants. There are no poppy fields. So anyone can, anytime could ramp up that supply. And it's my view, as well as the DEA's view, that there's enough fentanyl here to kill every American many times over. So that's the supply issues. How do you identify where it is, and how do you stop more of it from coming across the border? And that, I think, takes two forms. One is geopolitical action against China and Mexico on these issues, whether it's economic or even military in the case of the cartels, would be one major, you know, branch of action. And another branch of action would focus more on softer ways with both countries to get those points across.
We've got this massive export of a lethal drug whose only purpose is to kill, it seems to me, hollowing out a generation of Americans coming from China via the cartels in Mexico. What, to your mind, is the right geopolitical stance the United States can take to stop this flow of drugs into our country?
Yeah, so I think soft power works through the form of transparency, right? There is not enough global transparency on what we talked about today around where the precursors of fentanyl come from, what the cartel in Mexico's role is in this. And the more global transparency there is in the form of NATO discussions, UN discussions, in the form of just press, public press, because the reality is that this is going to spread. Right now, it's a US and Canada problem, fentanyl. It will spread to other countries. And I think getting them to understand that they're next is a big part, and showing them the data and how it spread here and how we were kind of asleep at the switch when it happened, I think is a big part of how we can exercise soft power, shining a light on the issue. And the more we do that, I think the more Mexico will be under pressure and China will be under pressure to react. There are also other drugs that are being put out now. Carfentanil is 2,000 times more powerful than morphine, right? Fentanyl is 50 to 100 times more powerful. This is 2,000 times more powerful. There is no antidote. So we have to be very good at publicizing when we find new drugs that are coming out that are mutations of fentanyl that are far more lethal. We need to publicize them right away. This epidemic started in the 2013-14 timeframe. We're talking about it now. We need to be talking about things as they happen.
First of all, it does seem it's almost a reverse opium war, that there's an effort to undermine the strength of our society. If the penalties are stiff at home, but there's an incentive to ship them overseas, and then the cartels being a perennial problem in distribution. One of the provisions in the bipartisan border security bill that was put forward and killed by Donald Trump and folks on the far right was a provision that dealt with cracking down on fentanyl coming into our country. What was that provision in that bill that could have been put in place? with bipartisan support.
Yeah, that was to put in more agents, more horsepower, more resources in terms of people at the border. And the other piece is technology, because you're not going to be able to just solve the problem with people and adding more people to the problem. Technology can be used, including data, to integrate data and to identify the source of a package and the destination of a package, and to come up with a probabilistic view of which packages to inspect, which vehicles to inspect. Because the U.S. government has lots of data. It just scattered and fragmented, just the same way it was prior to September 11th. DHS was created precisely to integrate data, people, and processes to be able to preemptively identify terrorists and take action prior to an event. And I think the same thing has to be done between different parts of the federal government in order to integrate data and use technology and data to do the same thing, as well as physical detection technology, to be able to detect without touching something from afar what might have fentanyl within it. And that is something that it needs to be developed, and R&D monies have to be spent on the federal government's behalf to be able to get that done.
But the first measure, that's something that was included in this bipartisan border security bill, correct?
That's correct.
And also, it's the constant fight over funding of Department of Homeland Security hobbles our effort to confront this problem fully, does it not?
That's correct. Absolutely. I believe that bill would have gone a long way in preventing tragedies. And every day that that bill doesn't get passed is 200 more people that are dying.
Every day that bill does not get passed, it's 200 more people dying. That is a sobering reality check.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
There's the federal, there's the geopolitical, as you say, but there's also going after bad actors abroad being coupled with stiffer penalties at home. What can the U.S. Attorney General's office do in terms of guidelines to federal prosecutors? Because these are poisonings. They are not overdoses. And it seems to me that we need to increase the penalties because accountability works.
Accountability does work, which is why we have zero deaths in China on fentanyl, right? Because they've made it very severe. Now, I don't think we can make it that severe in the U.S. I don't think it's palatable. We have to find pragmatic solutions that are palatable to both sides of the aisle. And I think they're too low on one hand, and in the past, they were too high, right? We are in this situation partly because from decades ago, small amounts of drug possession, including marijuana, led to the ruination of people's lives unfairly. And that's why we have expungement rules now, expunging those criminal behaviors of the past that went too far. So now the pendulum swung on the other side. Now, small quantities of fentanyl, which are lethal, get treated the same way. And therefore, many times dealers are being let out or are given very small penalties. In the case of my son, after a long and winding road of 3.5 years, we got justice in the form of 8 years in a federal penitentiary for his dealer. The dealer he just met as a stranger that night, and 3 years of supervised release. That was the justice. But the defense in most cases from these low-level dealers that are actually doing the distribution and are poisoning people is, I didn't know fentanyl was in what I was selling. I didn't put it in there and I did not know. And that was partly the defense of the dealer in this case. So part of my idea is to make sure that when you catch people in the possession with an intent to distribute of drugs, illicit drugs, that you make them aware that what they're distributing could kill someone. And once they're aware and made aware legally, then the defense cannot be, I didn't know. That's one way to kind of preempt that issue. And the second is there are very few cases where there is a federal law called DRD, drug-related death, which is a 20-year mandatory minimum sentence. Those cases are not being brought forward by the U.S. justice system. They're just not.
Why?
I don't know. I tried to get that done in my case with my son, and that was rejected. And I thought the evidence was pretty compelling of what happened. And it was compelling enough where the judge, on the basis of possession and intent to distribute of two counts, put someone away for 8 years, which is a record sentence in Connecticut for that kind of a crime. And the U.S. Attorney's Office in Connecticut did not want to go that far.
This isn't dealing drugs. This is poisoning young people. I mean, it's the leading cause of death for people in Suffolk County under 45. We had 20 times more fentanyl deaths than murders in Suffolk County, New York, in 2023 alone. That seems like an urgent issue that is dramatically different than dealing other sorts of drugs by any objective measure. So where's the urgency? And how can that policy shift occur? Is it on a state-by-state level or is it DOJ down?
I think it's on the combination of federal, state, and local. All three have to work together. It's a horizontal and vertical fragmentation issue. And I mean by that is different agencies have different parts of the puzzle across the federal government, state, and local. And there is no integration, right? That's evident from the fact that you don't have good data. You don't know the numbers of how many overdoses or poisonings there were. First of all, the data does not distinguish between overdoses versus poisonings, right? There are some people who are overdosing, and that definition is that you did it to yourself. The poisoning is someone does it to you, right? There are people in the U.S. that have substance use disorder linked with opioids, and they sometimes will take too much. And that is an overdose. The ones who are taking a Percocet or a Xanax that is counterfeit and is laced with fentanyl, in the case of my son, cocaine that was laced with fentanyl, those are poisonings. The data does not distinguish, first of all, between these two. Second, the data is a year and change old. If you go to the CDC and you look at the data, what you're able to see is 2022 data. And if you're lucky, you'll get a sense of 23 data. You're not going to get real-time data that's month by month, week by week, or day by day. Imagine if crime worked that way. Imagine if our criminal data was dated by 15 to 18 months. How do we effectively combat crime in certain places? Imagine if our communicable disease data was dated by 18 months. How would we combat COVID or any transmittable disease, communicable disease? We wouldn't be able to. We don't have the data, so we can't even attack the problem, right? That's one big issue.
It's just flying blind.
It's flying blind, completely flying blind. And there's also a stigma attached to this, right? You call it overdose, all of a sudden it's stigma. I had people reach out to me on social media after, you know, the news of my son's, what happened with my son went public. And people reached out and said, well, you know, he was an addict. He did too much. He took too much of it. He deserved to die, right?
People reached out to you and said that?
Yes, they did.
Where is the decency, people?
Yeah.
Come on. What about simple kindness? That's just cruel.
It was extremely cruel, but it also taught me something. You know, what it taught me is that people attach a stigma to drug use. And I think in the inside, they're angry that the government's not doing anything about it. In the inside, they don't want it to happen to their kids. So their reaction is anger, right? And that anger taught me something, which is the stigma has to go away. And part of the way to destigmatize this is to call it poisonings, because it is a crime. It is a crime by the person who gives it to you. It's not a crime first by the person who took it. No one's perfect. We all make mistakes. I didn't think Ethan would make a mistake like that, but he did. But it shouldn't have cost him his life, right? So who's more at fault here? That's really the question.
Well, and this does seem to be dramatically different than other drug epidemics we've dealt with because of the almost intentional lethality, which is why it seems to me that tougher penalties and a geopolitical response are entirely warranted. This is not dealing drugs. It's being accessory to manslaughter.
Correct.
It seems to me.
No, correct. And if there were higher penalties, I can bet you dealers would make sure fentanyl is not in what they're distributing.
That's right. That's right. They're not the victims here. And there are fentanyl strips that have been proposed in certain places, usually for individuals. But this is just a scourge that we need to take seriously. And I'm still somewhat stunned that it has not been a top line conversation. I think for some people, it's been blurred with the larger opioid crisis.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now, we should say there are some signs, even just by single-digit percentages, that we're seeing slightly fewer deaths year over year. And some of that is a result of harm reduction strategies that are being put in place unequally, imperfectly. But you make the case, and you were instrumental in helping Maryland pass a law, a bipartisan law, that made Naloxone, which is a form of Narcan, far more accessible in public places. Explain what that process was, because again, it's an example of the bipartisan, you know, possibilities that we actually can come together, even in divided times, to combat a common problem. How did you help spearhead a bipartisan harm prevention strategy in the state of Maryland?
Yeah, we started with the data that there's a downtick in these overdose deaths, but they're still higher than all vehicle fatal accidents and gun murders combined, right? So the number's still way too high.
Say that again. That's a stunning statistic.
The fentanyl-related deaths, which are, you know, 75% or so of all overdose deaths or drug-related deaths in the country, that number is still higher than all gun murders combined with fatal vehicle accidents. The combination of the two is still a lower number. Part of that is harm reduction, and that is getting Naloxone, or the generic name is Naloxone. The brand name is Narcan. Getting that in as many places as possible and training people on what to look for in case of a poisoning or overdose and what to do about it is missing in the country, right? We have public health classes in classrooms. They don't teach you this. They teach you all kinds of other stuff, including, you know, sex education, which is really critical. But no one's teaching you this. It's not mandated and part of public health training. And if you want to find Naloxone in a classroom, good luck. Right? Or even outside of a classroom, in a bar, in a restaurant, in a stadium. Good luck. So I work with Maryland, starting with Senator Smith, who I told my story to, and he listened.
It's a Senator William Smith, is that right?
William Smith, yes.
And what political party did he belong to?
He's in the Democratic Party. He took this bill forward, which is about putting Naloxone in AED boxes, which are the defibrillator boxes. This is what happens when you have a heart attack. These boxes are everywhere, and they're legally mandated to be everywhere.
Yes.
And people don't realize it, but those boxes, while they're very useful, only work 7% of the time in non-medical environments. But nonetheless, just like we don't tell people, hey, it's your problem if you don't keep your heart healthy, too bad. What we say is no. We accept that not everyone's going to have a healthy heart. And to counteract this, we will end up, you know, mandating AED boxes in as many places as possible so we can save as many lives as possible. Now, if you leverage that existing infrastructure and that existing legislation, and you put Naloxone, which is far cheaper than an AED box and far more effective than an AED, if you put that in every single AED box, then you're within arm's reach of many crowded places, airports, hotels, restaurants, you name it. They're mandated to be in a lot of places. And just open the box, put Naloxone in, tag it, so everyone knows it's there. It's got a 3 to 4 year shelf life, costs $45, right?
And that would have saved your son's life.
That would have saved my son's life. And a medical expert testified to that in the criminal case. And the casino didn't know what to do. They didn't train their people, or if they did, no one took action. It took 11 minutes. Took 5 minutes for them to call EMS, took another 6 minutes for EMS to show up, but they still didn't administer Narcan or Naloxone. They gave him an adrenaline shot and then intubated him, which took another 7 to 10 minutes. It was 25 minutes before he was being carted out, which is way too long for him to be without oxygen, right? So that was really the issue in my son's case. If someone had given him Naloxone, he would have been alive, right? Especially in the first 3 minutes are critical. After 3 minutes is when brain damage starts to set in most people. Without oxygen. So it would have been a completely different outcome had that happened. Drug users who are, you know, have substance use disorder and are opioid, addicted to opioids, They know this. They carry naloxone with them, and they do these drugs with their friends, and they are recovered many times. Part of the reason why there's a downtick in the data, I believe, is awareness in the drug user community that we should have naloxone, and naloxone is available to that community as part of the opioid restitution funds that came in, $50 billion that are sitting around in state coffers, most of which are not being spent properly to deal with the poisonings issues.
So requiring naloxone to be part of those AED boxes, decentralization would stop unnecessary deaths. And these are not addicts carrying Narcan or naloxone. This is for people who are poisoned.
That's correct.
Unwitting kids, young people, the kind of tragedies that we see too often.
Yeah.
So just taking a big step back, we've talked about the things that can be done on the federal level. What action would you like to see Congress take to combat this problem?
Yeah. So I think the education piece is important, right? One stat we have not talked about is about 22 kids between 14 and 18 years old die every week from fentanyl.
My God.
Right? And that is the number one killer for 14 to 18 year olds in this country. And the earlier you teach them about this and the earlier you make naloxone available in schools and educate the teachers as well, I think it'll have a huge preventative impact. So that, I think, is an easy thing. It's low-hanging fruit for Congress to pass legislation around mandatory education, public health education in school environments for teachers and students, and the placement of naloxone in schools. Because then everyone has awareness, right? You have an opioid emergency rescue kit on each floor. Something, God forbid, happens in a school, everyone knows where to go. Everyone passes it every single day. It's on top of mind. If it's not top of mind, you're not going to know what to do, right? There is the reason why there's a poster about choking in every restaurant. So it stays top of mind and people know what to do in case something happens. We don't have that awareness there. So awareness, I think the earlier you start awareness, the more lives you save.
And Kamal, part of the work you're doing on the education piece is you're not solely waiting for government to do the educating, but to your point, it is about, you know, culture and politics, and politics sometimes is downstream from culture. So you're taking an interesting and unorthodox approach to educating people about this problem through video games. Explain.
Yeah, I'm a technology person. That's my background. And when this happened, it occurred to me that kids learn through social media and through mobile games, and they pay attention far more to their phones than anything else. So I wanted to fish where the fish are to get awareness to the audience that's 13 plus. So I created a game called Joanna's Vision, which is loosely based on my family story. And it's a story of Joanna, who is Tyler's sister. In this case, in reality, it's Ava, who's Ethan's sister, that the game is modeled after. And it's to create an engaging experience, an emotionally engaging storyline where people get to make choices, save people through the use of naloxone. They get to understand the symptoms. There are also mini games within the game. So it's an engaging multi-hour game because we made it multi-hour and long because people put things into long-term memory when they're emotionally engaged. So to create that emotional engagement with the characters and animation and cinematography, we actually put a lot of time into this game. We took a year and 40 people to build this game. So that kids can download it, play it, enjoy it, have fun with it, right? They have to have fun with it. But along the way, they learn some life-saving techniques in case they do witness at a party or somewhere else someone have a fentanyl overdose or poisoning.
Education as entertainment. It's another piece of the puzzle. Then there's also kind of passing the bipartisan border security bill that would have a component to improve the technology and tracking of this drug into our country, correct?
Correct. And the third will be the criminal justice piece. Those are the three big things, because if you look at the awareness piece is not just kids, it's parents, because I talked to parents and many of them are shocked to hear what happened to Ethan and what the real stats are. Corporations don't know, right? In the case of the Mohegan Sun, they didn't know what to do. They were completely clueless what to do. Otherwise, Ethan would have been alive today. And governments really have not forced this awareness issue, even on themselves. Many government elected officials are unaware of how extreme fentanyl has become in terms of fatalities and impact of society. And the domino effect, every lost life represents a domino effect in our society that's pretty big. So I think awareness has to be in three vectors. It's people, corporations, and government.
Working together. That's how America works best.
Working together.
But as we think about the geopolitical aspect of this, as we think about what can be done with harm reduction, about increasing penalties, about ensuring that Narcan and Naxalone is more available. All these things are within our power to stop the kind of crisis, or at least stop its progression, that is destroying families on an unfathomable level.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank you, Kamal Barwani, for doing something constructive with the unimaginable grief you have experienced. To turn that channel, to channel that grief into something constructive, is an extraordinary sign of courage and civic commitment.
Thank you.
And your work will ensure that your son's life continues to have meaning and that other families will be spared that unimaginable pain. So thank you for taking the actions as a vigorous citizen that you are, so that we can help fix this fentanyl crisis before it affects more families. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, John.
And thanks for joining us on How to Fix It. I'm John Avlon. We'll be back next week with an interview with Jonathan Haidt, the best-selling author of The Anxious Generation, with a look at how to find common ground to solve the problem of social media and its impact on our kids, as well as how to combat digital disinformation. That will be here next week. Thanks for joining us. Please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it. See you next week. I'm John Avlon.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.